Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Welcome back to the Savvy Dentist Podcast, the show where great dentistry does indeed meet great business. It's Jesse Green here at the control panels, and today I wanted to have a conversation with you all about how to scale your dental practice. The work that we do in terms of the community that we build, the coaching that we do, is really all geared around helping practice owners transition from what is really an operator-style practice, one of self-employment, through to true business ownership, where you become unshackled from the business. You create another currency that really matters, and that is time. So it's not just about making money, but really creating time. Now, before we do get into that conversation, and it's a lengthy conversation, and we're going to be creating a two-part series, in fact, about that, I wanted to share a couple of resources for listeners of the Savvy Dentist Podcast. The first one is I'm delighted to be able to tell you that we have launched the Savvy Dentist app. It's available on both Android and iOS, so you can head across to the Google Play Store or indeed the App Store if you're an Apple user and download it there. It's free, and of course, it's where you can access all of our stuff, podcast, blogs, and a heap more stuff will be coming onto that platform as well. And we're really excited about that. It's taken a huge amount of work, and we're really pleased to be able to share that with you. It's a free app, so you can just head across and download it. No trouble at all. The second thing I wanted to share with you in terms of resources is our Facebook group, where we have some training, we have some tools, and we've got a community there. So you can continue the conversation over at the Savvy Dentist Facebook group, which is the companion group to this particular podcast. So that's a couple of resources there. Now, before we get into our conversation today, I wanted to also talk to you a little bit about why I think scaling a practice is so important. I think going back some years ago, 10 years, 15 years, however long it was, there was a general contentedness for dentists to be operators, to be self-employed. And that still persists for many dentists. But I've noticed over the last few years, there is a trend. Most people these days want to run a true business, or a lot of people do, I should say. But really, when I was starting out in practice, there was no training for that. There was no roadmap, there was no path. And so I followed the only path that was available to me. And of course, that was the traditional practice management path. And what ended up happening is I built a business that was really a job. So I want to talk a little bit about not doing that tonight, because what I found is when I did that, I outwardly looked very, very successful. The practice was making tremendously good money. We were very busy, but I was so stressed and so stretched that it became quite unfun quite quickly. So I want to talk to you about a different business model. And my experience is over the last few years that more and more people are looking for different things. Gone are the days where people are happy to sit in their room and drill for 40 years. And to do crown preps after crown preps after crown preps. People are looking for more. People want to have a business that can operate without them, and or at least without them having to do clinical work. And they're looking for something that's going to give them some leverage. So again, you know, the mantra of us all at Savvy Dentists is to create a practice and a life that you love. Not just a business that kind of owns you, but a business and a life. Because the challenge is, as I said a moment ago, is that there's not a clear path. So people are spending 20, 30, even 40 years toiling away because they don't know how to get it done. So I wanted to share a little story with you about how I came to discover this. And so in the early 2000s, I was working in practice, and as I said a moment ago, I was doing the traditional practice management thing, and it was going along fine. Yeah, we made good money, but as I mentioned, I was tired, stretched, and stressed, and wanted something different. But at that time, I knew no different. So for a variety of reasons, but one of the primary reasons being that I was burnt out, is we sold that business. And I threw my hands up in the air and thought, I just don't want to do this for the next 30 years of my life, but I knew no different. So what ended up happening is we moved back to my hometown, which is Brisbane, and I just thought it'd be great to be an associate for a while. Now, nothing against being an associate, so if you're an associate listening to this, that's completely cool. But for me, it turns out that I am the worst possible associate, and I feel so sorry for the people who were my bosses at the time. I must have been a bit of a headache. I didn't mean to be, of course, but I'm sure I was. But in any event, what I learned was I needed to be in a business of my own. And so what I did was I got interested in the internet. And this is going back to the times before SEO. So it doesn't seem like that's possible to think of the internet without SEO, but I'm telling you, it actually was a thing. And so I started building websites. I started selling things online. And then I started building a digital agency for dentists, which meant that I was building websites, running SEO campaigns, running AdWords campaigns, which were new at the time. And it was very, very, it was fantastic. It was Wild West. It was a really exciting time. But what I learned during that business was the methodology around scaling. And what ended up happening is I needed to look beyond dentistry to find the answers because they hadn't been available in dentistry at that point. And I still think they're not really that available in dentistry, but that's a whole conversation for another time. So in this two-part series, I wanted to talk to you about some of the lessons I learned in that and to share a framework with you around how to scale your practice so that you don't have to take the slow road that many other people have taken and you can get there faster and safer and easier. So I'm going to share with you that scaling is a bit like changing gear. And when you're in the operator style business, it's a bit like driving from Sydney to Melbourne in second gear. You know, you can only go so fast in second gear. And what ends up happening is you accelerate and accelerate and accelerate, but the engine starts to rev, it starts to get hot, it starts to burn out. And so rather than burning the engine out, you can either change gear, but you've got to know how to change gear. Or what most people do is they take their foot off the accelerator a little bit, drop the revs down a little bit, but stay in second gear. And scaling really is all about learning how to change gear. And what that means is there's a temporary taking foot off the accelerator. There is a changing of the gears. You engage the clutch, change the gears, and then a re-acceleration. And you can go faster and further than you ever could than if you'd stayed in that original gear. But what typically happens is when I explain that, it's so simple to understand. It's a really simple concept that's not easy to implement. And so most people, what that looks like is they get halfway through the gear change, and for a moment there, they might feel like they're in no man's land. They might feel like they're in neither second gear nor third gear. So rather than committing to the full gear change, they go back to what they know, and so they stay in second gear. And that really is what happens in the business models of dentistry, is they understand that scaling involves building teams and all that sort of stuff, but it becomes hard and it feels like you're in no man's land. And so what dentists typically do is they go back to what they know, and that is to control things. So I want to talk about four different types of practices, and this is like a hierarchy, if you will. And if you draw it on a vertical scale, we're going to start at the bottom of that scale and then move upwards. And the first business on that level is really an unviable practice, and an unviable practice is typically a new practice or a startup. And what's often happening in that scenario is that there's a practice owner who may be generating enough revenue from the business to cover costs, perhaps. But typically that practice owner is working elsewhere, or the business is maybe just barely giving them enough money to live. But in any event, what it feels like is that the business owner is running a charity, meaning they're working really, really hard for not a lot of money, and it just feels like they're not getting too far at all. And so what happens at that level, really what the business owner craves most is money. And there's a hierarchy of needs around this. And so they need to have revenue, they need to have cash flow. And so the next level in our hierarchy of practices is the profitable practice. Now, of course, you and I both know that there's a little bit of profit or a lot of profit. And there's some considerable variation in that level. But the thing with this particular level in the hierarchy is that it's the operator style business. The business owner still needs to turn up to generate the revenue. And if they're not there, typically revenue takes a significant hit. The expenses continue on. So the expenses remain constant, but the revenue fluctuates up or down depending on whether the owner is there or not. And so what that means is the owner feels compelled to stay in the business plenty of the time. They take a holiday, they might come back to a bit of a mess. They tend to worry that things won't be done as well as they could do them. And the thing that helps dentists become really profitable in that zone is exerting a high level of control over things, meaning that their fingerprints are on just about everything. And so what that looks like is lots of oversight, lots of checking, lots of micromanaging, lots of really looking over the shoulders of the people in the practice. Now, the thing around those first two levels, so an unviable practice and a profitable practice, what they both have in common is, well, firstly, the unviable practice, as I said, is a charity. The second level, the profitable one, feels like a job. But the uniting feature between those two levels is they're key person dependent. And what that means for the dentist is that you've got to be there. You're like the Lady Gaga. If there's no Lady Gaga, there's no show. And so it can feel a lot like that you're the sole performer and you've got to be doing everything. And so I want to talk about what that looks like. It looks like being stressed. It looks like being burnt out. And it's exactly the first business that I had. The first practice I had was a Lady Gaga business. And it was where I was the key person. And we all understand the risks around key person. It's a significant business risk. And it means that a practice that is key person dependent is nowhere near as valuable as one that is not key person dependent. And we'll talk about that in a minute. So if it's control that gets you to profitable, well, the next level beyond that is scalable. And a scalable business is one where the business owner has become unshackled from the day-to-day needs of being a revenue generator. It means that they've been able to build a team. And that team is able to support the practice by providing great care to patients on behalf of the owner. And once that happens, the business is well supported and that business in turn supports the owner. So that's the gear shift. It's rather than being the guy or the girl who provides great care to patients, it's being the guy or the girl who is able to build and lead a great team who can deliver great care to patients on your behalf. And that's the gear shift. And that's where people can't quite commit to that on many occasions because, again, it's very simple, but it's a very different skill set to the one that's required for running a profitable practice. And so it's a skill set that's not taught at university. It's a skill set that most people have to learn on the job. The level above a scalable business is one that's a valuable business. And when you think about valuation of a business, typically one of the common methods is the repeatable and sustainable earnings are multiplied by a multiple. And that multiple is largely determined by the degree of risk in the business. And so what we're looking to create is value over and above that revenue stream. And that means getting that multiple to be at its maximum level so that you create value. So a scalable business is one where it's a true business, and a valuable business is really about legacy. And so the difference between those two levels and the bottom two levels is rather than being key person dependent, a scalable and a valuable business really are reliant upon having a great team, a strong culture, and wonderful operating systems. And it's those things that drive the business forward. So I think it's really important to understand that what gets you to profitable, which is a high degree of control, won't get you to scalable. And to be candid, it's actually what you need to give up to get to scalable. You need to be able to give up a certain amount of control in order to get to scalable. And just to be clear, I'm not talking about exiting the business. I'm not talking about absentee ownership because I don't believe in that. I don't think it really works. But being able to give up a certain degree of control is really critically important. Now, again, it's a simple thing, but it's not an easy thing. So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about some of those things over the course of this mini series around scaling. So before we do get into a couple of the components and the framework I want to share with you, I want to talk a little bit about scaling versus leverage. Scaling and leverage are often used interchangeably, but they're not really the same thing. Leverage is where you put a certain amount of a resource in and you expect a certain amount of output in return. So you might put a dollar in and you get a dollar out. Really, and that's leverage, and that's what something that we're all familiar with. We're all comfortable around that, particularly when you think about borrowing money or leveraging off other people's time. Scaling really is about creating a disproportionate return for the investment. And that's really what we talk about in the work that we do, which involves leverage, but scaling is where we get a much greater return on that effort. And that's really the work that we're really passionate about. It's what Savvy Dentist is known for. And certainly the coaching clients I work with are all on that journey to transition from being an operator through to a true business owner. So anyway, we'll talk a bit more about that in a moment. I wanted to talk about a case study. And I think case studies are really helpful because they do give you an insight into real world results, but also some of the real world challenges and the real world solutions that came about as a result of someone going through this journey. So I was working with a client, and when she and I first started working together, I would say that she was taking home somewhere in that 350, maybe 400K take home. So you can call that net profit or EBIT, whatever you wanted to call it. And she was working about 4.5 days. It was a good practice, nothing wrong with it at all, and it's performing really solidly. Now, this particular practice owner at the time had a child and, you know, wanted to have more and so on and so forth. And so there was a need to be thinking about, how do we create time? How do we create a situation where she didn't need to be the one generating revenue? And so what we did is we worked really, really hard, and she was very adept at putting this into place, is we worked really hard at building a terrific team around her. And it started with identifying a couple of key people. So the first person that we put in was, we're going to call it a practice manager, but this particular staff member was much more than a practice manager. They were definitely an operations manager. They were able to manage the HR components of the business. They were able to understand the budgeting, and they were able to understand the forecasting processes in place. And not only that, they were able to execute on the critical drivers or the key activities that move the business forward. And they're able to execute on those really consistently. And what that did for my client is that freed her up to be thinking about the bigger picture, you know, the culture of the practice, the direction, business development, and so on. And so, to cut a much longer story considerably short, what ended up happening is she worked very hard on the framework I'm going to share with you in a moment. And the framework has four key parts. It's about building the assets of a practice. It's about creating a self-managing team. It's about strategic planning, and it's about consistent execution. And what my client was able to do while she'd built this team, so she started building the team, she started with a self-managing team and identifying the key roles that she wanted to fill first, as well as the key outcomes she wanted from each role, and how they would go ahead and execute in that particular role to support the business. What happened then is they built the intellectual property assets. So there was training, there was consistency of delivery. There's a heap of really good things happening there. They're able to build out some intellectual property around marketing. So they're able to drive the recruitment of new patients, really engineer the retention of patients and instigate reactivation. So the books were full. They're able to build intellectual property assets around their case presentation processes and a whole lot more. So anyway, this particular client was able to do all of that. And the outcome was that they were able to move from taking home, say, 350 to 400 grand a year up to $1 million a year. And in that particular year, my client worked 65 days. So $1 million of take home profit, not revenue, take home profit, for 65 days a year, which is a tremendous result in anyone's language. And so I wanted to share the story and the lessons learned around that particular case, because they're replicable. The lessons translate to anyone in their practice who wants to pick up those seeds and really get on with it. So that's what this two-part series is going to be about. It's going to be how to go from 300K to $1 million a year in terms of profit and work a whole lot less. So really, I think before we do go through the framework, I'd really encourage you to do the deep thinking around what you want from your practice. Now, I know that most people say, yeah, what I really want is time, and I want money, and I want this, and I want that. And I'm going to encourage you to actually go deeper than that, because if you want something from your practice, you've got to really want it. The great saying, I think it was Viktor Frankl that said that man can endure anyhow as long as he has a why. And I think that's a really important phrase and a saying, because what I really want you to be clear about is, as you build your practice, you're absolutely crystal clear about what it is you want your practice to provide for you. What kind of money do you want to be taking home from the practice? It doesn't have to be $1 million. It could be whatever it is you want it to be. It could be more than a million. There's no right or wrong. But what I want to know is, what's your number? What is it that you need from your practice to take home so that you can create a life for your family? Maybe it's educating your kids. Maybe it's supporting other family members. Maybe it's about building wealth outside of the practice. Maybe it's about doing something in the community that you serve. Whatever it is for you, I think you need to know what take home money you need to take out of your practice. And then equally, we want to know what kind of time you want to be spending in the practice. For some people who love clinical dentistry, that's great. Keep doing clinical dentistry. Nothing wrong with that at all. But for those people who really enjoy the business side of dentistry, you're going to need to think a little bit about how many clinical days do I want to do? So time in the business, how many days? Time on the business, thinking about business development, business strategy, execution of the various activities is going to be key. And then, of course, how much time away from the business or how much time out, whether it's holidays, weekends, you know, whatever it happens to be, further education, all of those sorts of things need to be factored in. Because what we're trying to get clear about is what do the goalposts look like? And to be really candid, most people don't stop and do the deep thinking about that. They might come up with a number, but they never really go that next layer deep and go, why is that so important to me? What's that going to give me? How do I connect with that at an emotional level? Because for some people, it might be security. For some people, it might be wanting to spend time with their family and connection. It could be a million different reasons, but rather than thinking, I want to have the Maserati and the babe on my arm and look great at the beach, which is perfectly fine if that's what you want. But generally speaking, things that go a little deeper than that are going to be the ones that motivate you to actually get it done. So it's really also important to understand that there are different business models. And you can adopt any of these business models you like, but you want to be sure that the business model that you're actually adopting has the capacity to deliver what you want and that you're capable of executing that business plan. So let me just give you an example. If you wanted to have the Lady Gaga business like my very first practice, which I sold, if you wanted to have that type of business and you said, I want to take home $3 million a year, you might be able to do that, but that's going to be pretty tough because you're going to be working really, really hard. And I think that that business model probably would not get you there, candidly. You're going to need a different business model. So you want to be sure that your business model and your goals actually align and that you have the skill set capable of delivering that business model. And if you don't yet have that skill set, then it's about identifying how do you hone and develop that skill set. And I think that's really key. So my point being is you can be as enthusiastic as you like. You can have all the NLP training under the world, under the sun and in the world. But if your ladder is up the wrong tree, you're just going the wrong way very enthusiastically. So let's get clear about what you want. And even if you need to scale, and assuming that you need to scale to achieve your goals, then let's look at the scaling framework. So once again, the scaling framework, it has four components to it. The first one is to build the assets of the business. Now, we'll go through this in this particular episode, but the second element of the framework is to create a self-managing team. And the third element is strategic planning. And the fourth is around execution. So in this particular part of the episode or this episode of this series, I want to share with you the building assets part because it is really, really key. So let me start by saying that every headache, every bottleneck, every frustration, every pain in the backside begins with a deficiency of assets. And assets come in a variety of different kinds. There is the intellectual property assets of your business. There's the physical assets of your business, the plant, the chairs, the gear, and so on. There's the human resource element of your business, the HR assets, which is your team. And of course, there's the database, your patient base, which is of course a business asset. So when it comes to assets, those are the four assets we work with most. And I'm going to really hone in on the intellectual property assets in this particular podcast. But before I do dive into that, I think it's worth understanding what assets are really there for. And so when you do a lot of reading around finance and around accounting and around all those sorts of things, it's really key to understand that assets are there to generate sales. And from those sales, you'll derive profit. Now, we all know that profit is not a real number. Profit is a number that the accountants manipulate to make sure that your taxable income is where it can be to minimize your affairs, legally, of course. So profit is a bit of a rubbery number. The number that really is important is operating cash and free cash. And what those two metrics are, a measure of the cash that's left over after the operations of the business. Now, in dentistry, operating cash and free cash are often the same. And once you've got that free cash, then really you've got a couple of choices. You've got three things you can really do with that free cash. You can buy more assets, you can pay down debt, or you can distribute that free cash to the owner. So just again, assets are basically designed to generate sales, to generate profit, to generate free cash flow. And that free cash flow can then generate more assets, pay down debt, or distribute to the owner. So there is a key to building assets and there is a key to actually utilizing the assets, and very, very, very important. So the intellectual property assets that we talk about in the work that we do is making sure that there is operational systems. Now, again, when it comes to systems, there's the McDonald's mantra, which is, you know, McDonald's is the most systemized business in the world. It's the most successful restaurant in the world. Therefore, systems equal success. And that's true to a point, to a point. The key with systems is to understand that if you over-systemize your business, you rob it of the flexibility, you rob it of the heart and soul, and it means that you rob your staff of opportunities to think outside the box, to be creative, and to add value in a way that makes sense for them. So that said, yes, systems are important, but we've just got to know where they're best used and best deployed. And as I mentioned earlier, every headache in the business is going to come back to a deficiency of assets. So we do need systems. There's no doubt around that. But we just need to make sure that we utilize them judiciously, particularly around core processes and core things that need to occur within the business. So I'm going to share with you a couple of systems that we utilize in our business and certainly that we teach in the Practice Max Mastermind, which I run for clients, and I'm going to share with you today. So I want to talk to you about standard operating procedures versus frameworks. And again, really, really key. So systems or SOPs, SOPs relate to standard operating procedures and they're designed for tasks. And we've got a template called the Speedy SOP, and it's very, very simple. It's almost checklist-like. So for instance, if you're processing outbound lab, it could be disinfect the impressions in accordance with the infection control guidelines, package the impressions in, you know, for transport, fill in the lab form, ring the lab to let them know that the work is on its way, ring the courier to have the lab work picked up and, you know, sent to the lab, complete the lab tracking form, you know, so on and so forth. So it's very checklist like and you can follow it through. And that's a standard operating procedure, and standard operating procedures are excellent for tasks. There's nothing wrong with that at all. The problem is that most practices that I've come across try to use that methodology, that SOP-like methodology, when it comes to human-to-human interaction. And so they use things like scripts, and they use checklists for patients, and so on and so forth. And again, I understand that they're trying to create consistency, and that's awesome. They're trying to make sure that everything's performing well. That's also awesome. But what ends up happening is those systems in a human-to-human interaction can become confining, they can become narrowing. So rather than relying on an SOP, we use a framework. And I want to explain what a framework is. A framework is a structure that allows you to get from point A to point B in a conversation while still allowing flexibility so that the person who's engaging that conversation can be themselves, they can be authentic, they can be responsive to changes in the direction of the conversation, but still ultimately get to the same end point. And so really it's about deconstructing conversations that have worked well in the past and looking at those various points that work. So just to give you an example, when I started teaching how to generate reviews or how to generate referrals, one of the things that came up, of course, was that people couldn't say it the way that I said it. And of course, no one needs to say it the way that I say it. What they need is the structure and the underlying architecture of that process. And so what ended up happening in the early days was people would try and mimic me. And that's just weird for them and weird for me too, because it's like wearing someone else's shoes. It's just not a fit. It feels a bit uncomfortable, and it just gets abandoned because no one wants to do it. So what we did was we decoded the conversation, we deconstructed it into its constituent parts, and we looked at the outcomes that we're trying to achieve for each of those parts so that we knew once we've achieved this outcome, we move on to the next part of the conversation. So Just to give you an example, I'm going to give you, as part of this podcast, the framework for how to generate or to how to ask for a referral. And you'll see it's very, very simple. You'll see the boxes there, and you'll be able to substitute your language for my language and then still arrive at the same point, but allowing you to be you and me to be me, and we've still got the same structure, so we still get to the same point. So again, I think it's really important to understand the difference between systems and SOPs, as well as frameworks for conversation. Very, very key, because if you over-systemize your business, if you go the McDonald's path, then you're going to end up with a McDonald's business. And McDonald's employs 15-year-old kids for their arms and legs, for their physical labor. What we want instead is we want hearts and minds. We want people to bring their best to our practice. We want them to really engage with their patients, and we want them to problem solve. And that doesn't happen just by following a script. It really just doesn't. So we need to make sure that we've got structure, and we train that structure, but we allow people to be themselves at the same time. So that's SOPs and frameworks. I also think it's really important to be able to look at other processes in the practice. Now, I'm going to give you one which is going to lead into our second part, and that is the second part of the framework is creating a self-managing team. So therefore, we need to have a process of employing people. Now, I'm going to go through the whole employment of people in more detail in our next episode, but I want you to understand that the employment is a process. Hiring is an event. Employment is a process. So what that means is we need to be able to recruit people. We need to be able to onboard people. We need to be able to train people. We need to be able to manage people. And we need to be able to recognize and reward people. And from time to time, we need to be able to resolve conflict as well. So all of these things are going to be important. So intellectual property assets around that, just to give you an example, might be talent maps for a particular role. It might be the scorecards for a particular role, which outline the objectives of a role, the key performance indicators of a role, the results that we're looking to achieve. It could also include the activities required to generate the key performance indicators or the results that underpin the objectives. And we also need to make sure we've got inbuilt accountability and reporting structures so that we know that that's happening consistently and well. So those are the intellectual property assets that you'd be building in an HR capacity. So again, if you're thinking about what assets do I need to build into my practice, well, the example or the question I'd be asking if I was in your shoes is, what are the problems that I consistently have to solve? What are the problems that I'm consistently being asked to solve? What remains unsolved? What are the questions people ask me all the time? What are people knocking on my door and seeking advice about? What are the things that keep me awake at night? What are the things that I lose sleep over so that I know that there's a shortfall or a gap? Where have we had glitches? Where have things gone awry? And make sure we close those gaps. So again, I've given you a couple of tools there to think about in terms of creating an asset that might be fit for purpose. You could have an SOP, you could have a framework, and you might even have a process such as the recruitment one I outlined a moment ago. So think about your SOPs, your frameworks, and your processes that are required. And I guarantee you, when you build those intellectual property assets, those assets now add tremendous value to your business, because those assets are used to generate sales and profit and cash flow that allows you to either buy more assets, pay down debt, or distribute money to the owner. That's the purpose of the intellectual property assets. Now, of course, we understand that purpose in the context of physical equipment and databases of patients and that and so on, but we need to be able to understand that from the perspective of the intellectual property as well. So guys, when it comes to scaling, four parts to the framework: build assets. Okay, the intellectual property assets, the database assets, the human resource assets, and of course the physical assets. Build those assets so that you can ultimately generate cash flow and buy more assets, pay debt, and distribute to the owner. That's step one. Step two is to create a self-managing team. And what that means is creating great culture, developing leadership, and so on, which we're going to cover in our next podcast. Step three is to be very adept at strategic planning, which involves risk assessment, risk analysis, risk mitigation. And of course, being able to finally execute on those actions and activities, which is step four. So those are the four steps of the scaling framework, and we've gone through the first of those steps today, and over the next podcast or two, I'm going to outline the remaining parts of that framework so you've now got something to scale up your practice so that you can move beyond a profitable practice where it's all about the money as the currency and transition to a business that produces not just money, but time, so that you're unshackled from your business, you can take a holiday, you've got flexibility, and you've got a practice and a life that you love. So I hope that's been helpful to you, and I look forward to catching up with you at the next podcast. But in the meantime, as I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, head across to the Savvy Dentist Facebook group. We'd love to see you there. And of course, do download the Savvy Dentist app from your iOS or Android at the various app stores there. In the meantime, take good care and have a great week. Bye now.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast with Dr. Jesse Green. For more free tools and resources, join the free Facebook group. Visit drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And for more episodes, visit drjessegreen.com/savvydentist.